It is Thursday, October 3rd, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by Ozark Natural Foods, Northwest Arkansas's consumer-owned food co-op since 1971, offering local, organic produce and all-natural groceries, bulk foods, health and wellness products, and a full-service deli. Ozark Natural Foods is located in the Evelyn Hills Shopping Center or on the web at ozarknaturalfoods.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the University of Arkansas receives the largest federal research grant in school history.
And innovative methods to teaching students history, arts, and science.
But first, more than 55,000 Arkansans eligible for the healthcare private option have notified officials of their intent to enroll. The Arkansas Department of Human Services, which contacted thousands of households in September about the new coverage, will begin sending out letters explaining the enrollment process this week. DHS spokeswoman Amy Webb says reactions have been positive despite initial uncertainty.
We weren't quite sure, you know, what kind of response we would get to just mailing out a single letter to these households. You know, historically, direct mail, you know, doesn't necessarily get the best results, but it was really the best way for us to reach out to these specific people. And so we were very pleased with the number of responses that we received.
Webb says the high numbers reflect a growing need for insurance across Arkansas.
There are people literally in every county in Arkansas who have said they wanted to enroll. So it really is a statewide program, and it really does, you know, appear to be something that'll be good for Arkansans all across the state.
Individuals who have yet to respond to letters received by DHS may do so to start the enrollment process.
Higher than expected income and sales tax collections pushed Arkansas's revenue numbers higher in September. The Department of Finance and Administration said yesterday net available revenue totaled $522 million, which is $28 million above the same month last year. It's also $16 million above forecast. Department economist John Shelnut notes this is expanding the state's budget surplus.
It's at $29.7 million. I think we're going to need that if we have to give some back later in the year due to any economic problems or this issue of the income tax filing season compared to the tax strategy from last year.
Shelnut says revenue was boosted by gains in all major categories of tax collections. Sales tax collections were $9 million above last year, while individual income tax collections were $20 million above last year.
The continuing government shutdown has caused the Arkansas National Guard to halt operations that could mean 10,000 Arkansas Guard members will not be paid. According to thecitywire.com, the officials with the Arkansas Guard announced yesterday October training would be delayed because of funding issues related to the partial federal shutdown. While H.R. 3210, titled the Pay Our Military Act, was signed into law Monday, continues to pay for active duty military, it's unclear whether the legislation applies to National Guard operations. In addition, the 188th Fighter Wing will not hold the unit's 60th anniversary celebration this weekend in Fort Smith, as originally planned. Furthermore, about 1,400 members of the military who are either dual-status federal employees or employees of the Arkansas Military Department were furloughed in the wake of the shutdown.
The Arkansas bank mergers and buyouts continue as Arvest yesterday announced its acquisition of National Banking Corporation. Arvest will buy 100% of National Banking's nearly 99,000 shares, though the purchase price was not named. The sale is expected to close in the fourth quarter. National Banking Corp. is the parent company of North Little Rock-based National Bank of Arkansas, which reportedly holds nearly $187 million in assets.
Today is the 50th anniversary of the dedication of Greer's Ferry Dam in North Arkansas. President John F. Kennedy spoke at the event, and it ended up being one of the final speeches before he was assassinated. He called the dam and projects like it important.
Set aside land for people so that as we get to become a more urban population, we'll still have some place where people can drive and see what their country looks like. And that's why this is an important work. And all those who attack these projects as pork barrel and waste and all the rest should realize the effect of these decisions have had on this state. No state in the Union is growing faster than the state of Arkansas.
Lori Driver with the Army Corps of Engineers says the dam served several purposes.
It was considered a project that brought prosperity to the area, flood risk reduction, hydropower, and it eventually grew into one of the best recreational sites in this region.
Today, former President Bill Clinton is leading the anniversary event from the same podium used by President Kennedy.
You've likely seen license plates adorned with Razorbacks or Trojans or numerous other license plates themed for colleges and universities around Arkansas. One more has been added as a choice. The State Department of Finance and Administration has begun offering a collegiate plate featuring the logo of Northwest Arkansas Community College. Stephen Hines, Director of Communications for the college, says that Jim Hall, Director of Community and Governmental Relations, originally proposed the idea, but that college officials have received interest from others as well.
It's been interesting. We have had a fair amount of response from individuals that are directly involved with the college. By that, I mean some of our faculty, some of our staff, some of our trustees. But we certainly want the general public to be aware that if they choose, they could select to have an NWAC license plate and therefore know that their money is going to support our students by scholarship money.
While they do cost slightly more than the typical Arkansas license plate, $25 from the sale of each plate goes back to the Northwest Arkansas Community College General Scholarship Fund.
The University of Arkansas volleyball team had its first conference loss of the season last night. The Razorbacks fell in four sets at home against Missouri. The team is now 2-1 in SEC play, 9-5 overall. Conference play continues tomorrow with a road match in South Carolina. The next home match takes place Sunday. Arkansas will host Auburn in Barnhill Arena.
Forecast calls for partly cloudy skies tonight with a slight chance of showers in the early evening. Overnight lows of 66 in northwest Arkansas, 70 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Friday, partly sunny with highs from 86 to 90. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Overnight lows from 62 to 64.
This is Ozarks at Large. This morning, the University of Arkansas announced the College of Education and Health Professions at the university has been awarded a $32 million five-year grant from the U.S. Department of Education. The money will help research aimed at teens with disabilities from low-income families and help them have improved educational opportunities and careers. Brent Thomas Williams, Associate Professor of Rehabilitation Education and Research at the University of Arkansas, is the principal investigator of what is called the Promise Grant, and he joins me on the phone. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
The Promise Grant, promoting readiness of minors in supplemental security income. Supplemental security income, money that is given to teenagers who fit in this category?
Yes, these are teenagers whose families meet the income requirement and receive benefits because of their disability status.
Now, I know that for many of us who have a career, we had a first job, maybe an internship, an apprenticeship, or that first sort of job. It's harder, I imagine, if you're a teenager from a low-income family with a disability to get that first experience.
Well, in fact, you know, that's been for years. Folks that work in the field of disability or folks that work in specifically rehabilitation counseling, there's been anecdotal or incidental information that we knew that kids with disabilities, adolescents with disabilities, particularly those with moderate to severe disabilities, just don't have that first job in fast food or that internship at maybe the start of their career. And not ever having that initial experience really locks them out of the world of work. And an enormous amount of the preponderance of research that we have shows that if you do not have a first work experience between the ages of 18 and 25, the likelihood that you will ever work drastically reduces. And so what happens is you have kids with disabilities who graduate from high school, never have that first work experience, and remain on disability benefits for the remainder of their lives.
So how, over the next 5 years or the 5 years after this begins, what will happen?
Well, the prospect of this is this is a study, and it's a classic double-blind study. There'll be 2,000 individuals involved. 1,000 individuals will actually remain in the system as it is now. They'll go through the educational system. They'll be provided with all those services. They'll be provided with all the services that the state typically provides adolescents with disabilities. But another 1,000 will be invited, and this is a voluntary study. Mm-hmm. We will recruit individuals, adolescents with disabilities and their families, to participate in the Promise Grant study. And there will be a variety of services. There will be benefits counseling. We'll provide job coaches when they're on the job, job shadowers to help them in this process of an enormous amount of support. But the main thing is to provide these 1,000 adolescents in Arkansas who receive Social Security benefits with that first paid job experience, with the idea of being, and this is what the Social Security Administration wants to know, is if those adolescents receive assistance in getting that first job, to what extent does that correlate with later competitive work attainment?
You know, and sure, anecdotally we think, well, of course this will make sense and it works, but you can't just go on anecdotal. You've got to do research and do these sorts of things.
And, you know, and there's been smaller studies at smaller levels, but you got to figure for this grant, for the serious grants, 5 of these grants were awarded. Okay, mm-hmm. So that means you're going to have, in essence, 10,000 folks involved in the study, 5,000 adolescents with disabilities receiving this intervention. That's a large enough number that when this is said and done, you'll have a pretty good idea of the correlation between an initial first job paid work experience and later competitive work attainment. Because, you know, the issue is particularly with the current political environment, that's not true. Always. Washington has always been loath to do proactive funding, you know, to spend money up front to prevent something as opposed to spend money all along.
To try to fix it or...
Right.
Right.
And so, you know, to be honest, one of the issues that we've known for a long time is even up until the 60s and 70s, if you looked at folks with moderate to severe disabilities, cerebral palsy, spina bifida, there's a variety of disabilities, lifespans for people with disabilities are increasing. And people with moderate to severe disabilities, Stephen Hawking is in his 70s. I forget exactly what his age is. Okay, so what's happening now is Social Security is looking at kids who get on disability when they're 16. They're not going to live to be 30 or 40. They're going to live to be 70 or 80. And so the model Social Security is looking at, quite frankly, this is a fiscal managerial issue for the Social Security Administration, is if they pay money for 1 year to get a kid his first paid work experience, will that somehow keep them from paying for 70 years of payments throughout the course of his life? That's a pretty big question to answer.
Now, you'll have 2,000 in the double-blind study here in Arkansas. Like you mentioned, there are 5 states overall, but I imagine this isn't something you do without some partners.
Oh, this is yes, all Department of Education here at the state level, Workforce, Voc Rehab. I'm going to Health and Human Services. Yes, I mean, and I'm sure I've left out some that will get me in trouble, but.
But suffice to say, there are a number of entities working. So the public, most of us learned about the awarding this morning. How much advance notice did you have?
I believe if I go back through, we kind of had – some of it was kind of relayed along the way. Last Friday was when I found out.
So what happens next?
Well, oddly enough, as with the government shutdown, I'm not able to talk to my project officer.
So you have to wait until we get the partial shutdown taken care of.
That is to some degree a contingency. We are scheduled to fly to Washington. Some of the I'm the PI and other individuals with the grant will fly to Washington on the 28th of October, and that's when we'll sit down with the project officer and literally go over the grant line by line, item by item, and work out the finer details as to how this will proceed.
Brent T. Williams is Associate Professor of Rehabilitation Education Research at the University of Arkansas. He's the principal investigator of the just-announced Promise Grant for the University of Arkansas from the U.S. Department of Education. Thank you so much for your time, and congratulations once again.
Oh, absolutely.
The Senate Intelligence Committee has condemned government spying on American citizens.
That was decades ago. How vulnerable is your privacy today?
I sort of think of your credit card as the table of contents of your life.
From your phone bill to your medical records, how your digital data could be used against you. Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered can be heard this afternoon from 3 to 6 on KUAF Public Radio.
Last month, we reported on a survey released by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville that showed the positive short-term impacts of cultural experiences on school children, such as field trips to the museum. Walton Arts Center also partnered with the University of Arkansas to study the long-term effects of exposure to the arts on kids. Laura Goodwin is Walton Arts Center's Vice President of Learning and Engagement.
We had the advantage of having years and years of data of which kids came to Walton Arts Center and which kids did not. The results are exciting. By interviewing seventh grade students, many of whom had come to the Walton Arts Center a lot during elementary school, and then many who had not come at all by virtue of which schools they attended, we interviewed them or surveyed them to find out how they were different. And what we found that kids that came a lot say that they want to be cultural consumers, so they want to go to Crystal Bridges, they want to go to Walton Arts Center, and they also participate in the arts more than other kids. So they're more involved in their school programs, and they say they want to continue to be involved in the arts.
The results also showed a difference in values among the groups of kids. Kids that come to the arts often have more empathy and tolerance than kids that don't come as often. Both studies showed the effects of arts were much stronger on minority and rural kids.
So kids that have the least access benefit the most from programs at Walton Arts Center and at Crystal Bridges. So field trips are so important, and having this kind of research is so important to Walton Arts Center because it lets us advocate in a new way. So how do we make sure that every kid in Northwest Arkansas has an arts field trip every year? This kind of research is really going to be a support for us and help us speak with more authority to the school districts in Northwest Arkansas.
Last year, over 50,000 school children went through various Walton Arts Center programs, such as the Colgate Classroom Series and Digging Up Arkansas. This year, Goodwin estimates they will reach at least 30,000 and work with 400 teachers, teaching them how to integrate the arts into subjects like history and literacy. Which brings us to today's field trip, a performance of Bear State of Mind. Building on the success of Digging Up Arkansas, a program that has brought Arkansas history into the classrooms of third to fifth grade students for the past several years. A partnership in imagination with Trike Theater, a Northwest Arkansas professional theater company for youth, continues with this Bear State of Mind. This production has gone through a few iterations. Originally, it was designed to go into the classroom, but thanks to a grant from the Mid-America Arts Alliance, this play is performed on a grander scale inside the center's Star Theater, providing school children a richer experience. Cassie Mishevitz is artistic director with Trike Theater.
So we were very excited to be able to bring in a gentleman named Christopher Parks, who had originally been at the McCarter Theater developing a style of theater called experiential theater. He now owns his own theater company called the Experiential Theater. But what he does is that he takes a script and a narrative form, and he figures out ways for the audience to be a part of it. So at times the audience is watching like a typical, normal, traditional audience. And then there are times when there's snakes and bunny rabbits and there's call and response. And then my big thing about this is that I wanted the experience not just to be within the audience-actor relationship, but also within the environment, because Star Theater is perfect for it.
The idea is to transform a space and use the theater and the tools theater offers to be able to offer a new and unique experience to young people, one that isn't a video game or a movie. Differing from Digging Up Arkansas, which focused on tableau to reflect on Arkansas history and brought the students up close to the actors, Bear State of Mind asked these youngsters to participate, which is imperative to their oral and visual learning style. Bear State is geared toward kindergartners, first and second graders, and written by Northwest Arkansas playwright Ashley Edwards and songwriter Shannon Wurst, it meets Common Core State learning standards. The play takes students on a camping trip through Arkansas.
There is a small little Arkansas black bear that gets lost in the woods. He's befriended by a barred owl, and through their friendship, they go on a journey to uncover the scary legend of the Goro monster. Along the way, they travel to the Arkansas Delta, down the Mississippi River, over to the coastal plains, back up through the Ouachita Mountains, and back up to northwest Arkansas. So we take a trip around Arkansas, and in the meantime, we also find a mockingbird and woodpecker, a white-tailed deer, a pine tree, and so we learn a lot about the state symbols, bumblebee as well, and then also go through all the different regions of Arkansas.
The experience doesn't start inside the theater. It begins in the lobby, where about 135 students from Montessori, St. Vincent de Paul, and a couple of other schools wait, somewhat patiently, as the stage manager engages their imaginations.
Welcome to the Walton Arts Center. We are about to see a play called Bear State of Mind. Before you go in and see this play, I wanted to tell you a little bit about what you should expect. Normally when you come to a theater, you'll sit in chairs, but we're not sitting in chairs. We're gonna sit on sleeping bags and tarps on the floor. Ah, so cool. And so one thing to remember about these sleeping bags is that they're spread out, but you should sit with your class and stay with your class on those sleeping bags, because as you'll see, there are dirt paths on the floor where the actors will be going in and around.
Once the rules are laid out, the experience begins. Actors Jason Sewell, Shannon Wurst, and Julie Gable, who play brother and sisters Tommy, Patsy, and Hattie, welcome the kids and get their imaginations flowing.
You know, before we go into our campground, there are a couple things we need to do. And the first thing we need to do is make sure that everybody has on your hiking boots. You brought your hiking boots,
did you bring
right?
your boots?
Oh, don't worry if you didn't. They're right in front of you. Go ahead and pick them up and put them on your feet. Make sure you lace them up really tight.
Tommy, Hattie, and Patsy bring the students class by class into the theater, walking under a leaf canopy and into the magical forest, where tents, a picnic table, and sleeping bags await. The trip begins with Patsy strumming a guitar and reminding the campers of their home, Arkansas.
Hey, do you guys want to hear what we just learned?
Yes.
Sure. Are you guys ready?
Is no shushing allowed. In fact, making noise is encouraged.
A woodpecker! It is a woodpecker! Let's make that sound.
If the actors need the students' immediate attention, they raise their hands and wave them, slowly moving them down. The kids, anxious to see what's next, abide as the black bear puppet makes his entrance, ready to take the campers on a trip through Arkansas to meet new friends and uncover wildlife, folklore, and state symbols. Bear State of Mind has been on preview to 2,000 kids for the last 2 weeks, with a final performance tomorrow. After the kinks are ironed out, the play will be ready in full force for next fall's entering students. This is Ozarks at Large.
At Greer Lingle Middle School in Rogers yesterday, there was more hands-on learning inside a science lab full of blinking lights, moving objects, and surround sound. Leading the controlled whirlpool of activity was Nick Jones. Yesterday, he was guiding Tamara Dunn's sixth grade science class through the lab
to accomplish different goals that would get them to Planet X.
The 25 sixth graders were working in teams of two and three at several different stations inside the lab, all trying to accomplish tasks that would allow them to reach and colonize the fictional Planet X.
So we've got designing a rocket using a computer-aided design program, testing small-scale aerodynamics on rockets. We've also got ROVs on the surface of the planet to talk about exploring a planet before actually sending people out there, but then also colonizing the planet, building structures to withstand a completely new environment that we're not used to. And then other things that you might have to manage, like getting power to places, managing your energy, because, you know, space stations, you can't run a power cord up to them. And so, you know, you have to figure out how to gather solar energy and be very energy efficient.
During their 3 to 5 minute stages at each station, they were required to use some basic critical skills important to learning. Nick Jones says sixth grade is a pivotal time for establishing a relationship with science.
Kids are starting to kind of decide what they want to do, what seems feasible. And when you think about science, and this is one of the things that we ask them, you know, what did you think a scientist did? You know, everything you did was something that a scientist would do. And it was something, you know, all of you were very successful at what you just did. You know, how many of you feel like science is something you can do now? And I love seeing hands come up after I ask that question, because it makes them realize that it's something very approachable and that everybody has to start somewhere. And that it's something still really easy to do.
There was a small robot students had to teach how to move and distinguish colors. Another exercise separated team members and challenged them to communicate by phone to solve a problem.
You're going to talk on the phone with your partner, all right? She has gone down to the aft fuel cell, which is broken right now, and she's got to try and fix it, but she doesn't know how. You guys have the instructions on how to fix it up here, but you're not down there to do it. So you've got to read her these instructions and describe the pictures to her.
All of this educational cacophony is mobile, contained inside a rolling museum that's 40 feet long and weighs 16 tons. It's a moving science ambassador from the Museum of Discovery in Little Rock, and formerly known as the Race for Planet X Mobile Science Museum. And Nick Jones is officially the Mobile Museum Outreach Coordinator. Nick says yes, the hardware packed into the museum is impressive.
It's even more to have all this tech and something that goes bouncing down 540 to get up here. It's a lot of work on the road, and it was a lot of work actually getting it made. We're sponsored by the Donald W. Reynolds Foundation, which, you know, if you've been just about anywhere in Arkansas these days, you've seen the name Donald W. Reynolds somewhere. But we get a little bit of that money, too, and so his grant helped build this truck. And, then it's just a lot of maintenance, and, you know, inside each exhibit has a computer, most of them, and different processors and things.
Over the course of a year, the Mobile Science Museum will travel all over Arkansas, and last year hosted about 5,000 Arkansas students. The stop at Greer Lingle Middle School in Rogers was for 2 days. Next week, Nick and his partner Brittany will be in Corning and Piggott in northeastern Arkansas. Wednesday afternoon, Tamara Dunn was escorting her science classes through the technological environment. As she helped some of her students figure out how to build structures in space, she admitted she was anxious to see how much of what was being learned inside the mobile lab would be retained.
This is the first time I've seen this museum, so I don't know, but I know that they are so actively engaged and excited, it's going to be hard to calm them down to get them back in the building.
Nick Jones says helping the sixth graders keep a grasp on the basic concepts after they are out of the whiz-bang habitat is a priority. So teachers are given a collection of items and possible classroom exercises to build upon the hour-long visit inside the mobile museum.
It's got laser pointers and thermometers, and it's got a USB with all the instructions on it and CDs and different things like that. We've started that recently, and that's really to hope that it, you know, they have a lot of fun on here and they pick up this information, and then those post-visit activities really make sure they stick.
Nick says the most difficult station allows middle school students to work with a laser beam.
You start with a single laser beam, and you have to get it to 4 different stations all at the same time. That's their ultimate goal. And so there are 2 beam splitters and then several other mirrors, and you have to rotate the mirrors and get them at the right angle so you're learning, you know, without actually getting the big heavy concepts, you're learning about angles of incident and, you know, light reflecting off of a surface. And then also with the beam splitters, you're just having to work out that problem solving of the beam splitter will split the beam in two, and you can control the angles of those 2 beams and then where it needs to go from there.
And just in case things ever get too predictable, Nick can, with the push of a button, set off a red alert or a jaw-dropping thunderstorm. He admits the thunderstorm doesn't really teach anything, but it adds to the experience.
It was just a little bit of fun to keep them on their toes, remind them that you can have fun while still doing some science.
Tamara Dunn says she welcomes the chance for her science students to become engaged in a hands-on surrounding because it might keep them interested in science and math longer and not have to catch up later like she had to.
And it wasn't until I was in college that I decided that it would be my goal to improve my science skills because I didn't do well in college chemistry. And so then I fell in love with it, and I've it's all I've taught, you know, so 23 years.
As for Nick Jones, the coordinator with the Mobile Museum, science and education have been passions for almost as long as he can remember. And he says being able to cross the state with a big truck that is loaded with gadgetry has led him full circle by allowing him to work with the Museum of Discovery.
And back when it was the Arkansas Museum of Science and History, my mom worked there. And so I'm basically carrying on that legacy. I knew I wanted to get into museum work. And right out of college, this was at a job opening, and I knew it would be fun. And it was a great way for me to get a foot in the door. And just a week ago, I was actually working on an exhibit that she started 30 years ago at the museum.
The race for Planet X Mobile Science Museum was at Greer Lingle Middle School in Rogers for 2 days this week and will be in northeastern Arkansas next week. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
Ozarks at Large is also sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
KUAF is supported by Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. These daily newspapers offer local, state, national, and international news, plus business and Razorback news. NWAOnline.com for more information.
In just a couple of minutes on Ozarks, Families Helping Families, how a simple family photo can help new parents. But first, many philanthropic people call this region home, and the cool temperatures and fall foliage, well, eventually we'll have fall foliage, right, of a Northwest Arkansas October provide the perfect atmosphere for many nonprofit events.
Tomorrow, the 22nd annual Tom Pagnozzi Charity Golf Tournament takes to the course at Springdale Country Club. And this year, the ultimate tailgate and auction will immediately follow the golf tournament inside the clubhouse. Event proceeds will go to benefit the Pagnozzi Charities Youth Sports Scholarship Program. The program grants sports scholarships to underprivileged children, kindergarten through eighth grade in Northwest Arkansas. For more information, visit PagnozziCharities.org.
And Saturday, the 12th annual Brits in the Ozarks All-British Car and Cycle Show, which benefits the ALS Association of Northwest Arkansas, will take place. It's sponsored by British Iron Touring Club of Northwest Arkansas. Show begins Saturday morning at 10 and runs until 3 Saturday afternoon at Agri Park on the University of Arkansas campus. This year's special guest is John Twist of University Motors, legendary mechanic, MG guru, and general British car whisperer. British Iron NWA.org for more information.
The Elizabeth Richardson Center will celebrate 50 years of serving children and adults with disabilities Thursday, October 10th at the Fayetteville High School Performing Arts Center. This year welcomes award-winning author, performer, and motivational speaker Jerry Jewell. She received worldwide recognition, being the first person with a disability to be cast in a primetime series, NBC's The Facts of Life.
I remember watching that when it happened.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I don't. Okay. I remember The Facts of Life, but.
Yeah. Okay.
The event begins at 7 p.m. 479-872-1800 for more information.
Wine enthusiasts will be pleased that Winotopia is returning to the Pratt Place Barn in Fayetteville, benefiting Restore Humanity. That's the organization dedicated to bettering the lives of the less fortunate around the world, in particular with their orphanage in Kenya. That has come a long way. They've done a lot of stuff in the years that Restore Humanity has been around. There will be a selection of wines available as well as an array of cuisine to complement the wine. If you want to know more, that's restorehumanity.org. And that is Friday, October 11th.
The 2013 Goblin Run in Bentonville is Saturday, October 26th, with a 5K beginning at 8 a.m. and a family fun run 1K at 8:45 a.m. This run benefits Rebuilding Together of Northwest Arkansas. The race begins at the Downtown Activity Center, which is located at 215 Southwest A Street in Bentonville. For more information, run bentonville.com or call 464-7275.
And the Arkansas Children's Hospital's sixth annual Fall Carnival will provide booths and games for elementary school children at the Pauline Whitaker Center in Fayetteville. That takes place the evening of October 29th from 5 until 8. If you'd like to know more, you can go to archildrens.org.
And at the end of this month, there will be a family photo fest at Mount Sequoia to benefit the Northwest Arkansas Family Network. 20 years ago, a professional woman with two young children needed some help with disciplining them. She turned to her community for parenting tips, yet couldn't find any information. And so the Northwest Arkansas Family Network was born. Judy Singleton is the executive director of the organization. Her background is in child abuse and neglect prevention and Head Start in-home education for moms and dads to prevent child abuse and neglect.
There are a lot of risk factors for abuse and neglect. Some of those involve parenting itself, not knowing a child's developmental capabilities. So if you're expecting a six-month-old to be potty trained and they are not potty training, parents can get extremely angry about that. But it's those developmental expectations and appropriate expectations for your children that can be a snag for some families.
So started the Family Network's home visiting and in-home education programs. Parents' personality issues may also contribute to abuse because they don't know how to cope or have anger issues, and it's often taken out on the children. Judy says the majority of child abuse cases are for children that are under the age of 5.
Those are the most vulnerable population because they can't stand up for themselves, and the littlest ones can't say, "Don't hit me, Dad," or "Don't hit me, Mom," or "What did I do wrong?"
There are other factors that lead to child abuse. Perhaps the parent didn't have a proper role model themselves and just don't know how to handle the discipline of a small child. Family Network has three thrusts that it works with: the prenatal stage, child development, and adult development. During the prenatal stage, the most important part is ensuring that a mom is getting prenatal care, avoiding substance abuse, and eating well in order to deliver a healthy baby. Many young mothers don't realize that a low birth weight baby could have developmental disabilities later on. The organization will often work with mothers considering abortion or letting another family member take care of that baby in order to educate the mother and their family that they are fully capable of caring for their own child.
And a real fun instance, right before Christmas, I got an email from a young woman who's 27. She said, "I don't know if you remember me or not, but you worked with me when I was 15. My daughter is now 12. And for her to have that connection to the program, that she was so impacted that it made such a difference in her life, and to seek me out with an email address to let me know that, was really important. Her mom wanted to raise the child because she was so young. And she wanted her to sleep in her room. She wanted to feed her. But this young mom wanted to do the job herself. So our job was to teach her the skills to be the good mom.
Judy says afterbirth is the fun part for the parent educators. They don't lecture or give out handouts. They provide hands-on education, showing new parents how to soothe a fussy baby or how to interact with the baby so that they are developing the skills they need.
You know, what do you do with this little 6-pound, 8-pound baby that you just brought home from the hospital? They don't know you can read to them. They don't know you can get down and do particular things with them that are real interesting to the baby, that they love black and white, that they love sound, that they love shiny mirrors. So in tummy time, we, you know, show moms and dads, how do you get down there and do that? And what does that mean to the child? What are they learning?
Family Network works with other organizations in the region, often getting referrals of families that could benefit from their services. The only eligibility criteria is that the mom is pregnant with their first baby or has just had their first baby, and they enroll them in the first 3 months. Though if they have 10 applicants and only 5 openings, they do look at certain criteria, such as being a single mom, problems with housing, prenatal care, no family support, and so on. As a nonprofit, the Northwest Arkansas Family Network needs funding. Much of that comes in the form of grants and community support. Both monetary and physical donations are welcome, in particular books. The Family Network teaches parents the importance of literacy. The organization also has an annual event, the Family Photo Fest, at the end of October and beginning of November. This year will mark the 11th year.
The reason that we came up with this, we tried to have fundraisers that are family friendly and focused on family issues so that they can kind of relate that not everyone is as fortunate as they are. So if they can give to someone who's less fortunate to have a better family life, they can make that mental connection. So having families come and have portraits done on the mountain, then they get to view their proofs. They can choose what they want for portraits. They can choose what they want for their holiday cards.
A professional set of photos in a beautiful fall setting. It's perfect for families looking for a holiday photo.
It's about families helping families.
That's Tavy Ellis, a photographer who is donating her time to take pictures. She once worked at a local photo developer who developed the pictures from Family Photo Fest. And now she's behind the camera. She is also the mother of two young children.
I did a lot of reading and talked to my family. I have a long line of strong women in my family, great mothers, and so I was fortunate enough to be able to learn from them.
But not everyone has that, and so Tavy is donating her time and her expertise to capture photos for the fourth year. Though all families are unique, many want to capture little children, who are not typically known for sitting still. Picture the photographer waving the squeaky toy behind the camera.
I guess I just use my innate skills as a mother, the tactics I would use with my own kids to get their attention and keep them still. It's all about family, so I'm blessed to use my skills with my own family on those that I take pictures of.
The Mount Sequoia location offers numerous places to pose. The hike between often serves as an energy outlet for many of the youngins. Whether a young couple celebrating an engagement, a group of siblings wanting to give the gift of film to their mother celebrating her 90th birthday, or a couple whose family is five dogs.
Family dynamic has changed so much over the generations. Family can mean almost anything now. And so you never know exactly what you're going to get. But my focus is to create quality family portraits that will hopefully last for generations.
About 60 families participated in last year's fest, with Tavy taking photos of close to 30 of them. Families can make their appointment for a sitting either the last weekend of October or the first weekend of November by calling 927-3659 or visiting the Northwest Arkansas Family Network's website, familynetworknwa.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
Earlier on the program, we heard how a play could teach school children about Arkansas history. Now, more learning through the arts. An exhibit at 21C Museum Hotel in Bentonville highlights the turbulent history of Cuba. Ozarks at Large's Katie Hendrickson takes us there.
Transporting Transformations, Cuba In and Out is the name of the new exhibit just up at 21C Bentonville, the museum hotel just off the downtown square that opened up last spring. There are familiar sights coming up to 21C Bentonville, such as Alexandra Archeria's orange tree. That's a tree that is bright orange and made up of tons of basketball hoops. Also, new sights such as a 1950s era automobile with a person screwing on human appendages. A walk into the lobby reveals a family or group of people all made up of recycled clothing. Just across the way from the Hive, the bustling restaurant bar portion of the hotel. Alice Gray Stites, Chief Curator and Director of Art Programming for 21C, is in town to talk about the new exhibit.
The artistic visions that are presented here reflect the evolution of competing ideologies. After the demise of the Marxist revolution led by Castro, the promise of a kind of socialist utopia has faded, and the development of greater commerce. What is the promise of capitalism versus the Marxist utopia that has now passed? And then, of course, the continuing other belief systems like religion.
In addition to those themes, Stites also explains how the landscape and urban architecture reflects what is happening in Cuba today, socially, politically, and environmentally.
A number of the installations illustrate or reflect on how the buildings in Cuba, the beautiful colonial buildings of the past, are decaying alongside those that were built in the 60s and 70s when Cuba was getting a lot of financial support from what was then the Soviet Union. As those resources disappeared in the wake of the breakup of the Soviet Union, buildings that were intended to be for the future have begun decaying alongside the past. So time, the disjunctions of time, the past decaying along with what was to be the future in this present, is another theme in the exhibition. What artists are doing and what many Cubans are doing in their day-to-day lives are being ingenious in creating a new future for their city and their nation.
The media might be diverse, as is the message, but one piece informs the other. Everything seems intertwined.
And sometimes seemingly in opposition to one another. Again, that sense of paradox is really prevalent and rich, and it allows us to see what a layered and complex culture is what in Cuba, and how fascinating and how much they're adding to the art world far beyond their own shores. Some of them may be isolated, but their artwork is reaching out and connecting all over the world.
In 2010, Alice Gray Stites gave a TEDx U.S. Embassy Stockholm talk called Art is a Verb. In the introduction, she says, art is too important and too essential to all of our well-being to be relegated to the nebulous security of the passive. We need to talk about what art does and what art is, not what art says or what it represents. And 21C Bentonville is a perfect example of this philosophy.
Contemporary artists are not making work that simply adds an aesthetic layer that entertains or decorates, although those are wonderful things that add to our lives and our culture as well. But many of them are creating works that solve real-world problems, that address important issues. We're looking here at a commissioned project for 21C Bentonville. This is the Tree of 40 Fruit by artist Sam Van Aken. So Van Aken is a multimedia artist and now, I guess, an arborist based in Syracuse. And what he has done is to graft 40 different kinds of stone fruit trees. Now, many of these are what I think it's fashionable now to call heirloom species. But in fact, these are species of trees, hybrid species that otherwise would no longer exist. So these are species that are dying off, some of them because of environmental conditions, because they are not growing anymore. And Sam has started this whole process where he creates these beautiful trees where the fruits will continue to grow and to blossom. That's doing something.
Another example of art doing something is Dan Rosegard's Flow, a site-specific permanent installation at 21C Bentonville.
He, like many contemporary artists, is not simply an artist. He's an engineer, an architect, a designer, as well as a visual artist. In fact, he just won what's known as the Oscars of the design world, the Index Award, that's given to design that makes a difference in the world. So what he's done here, Flow, is actually a smart wall of ventilators, and there are sensors embedded in it that when they pick up on both sound and movement, begin to spin, releasing air into this space. So what this work does is it activates the architecture surrounding it, the space that you're in, makes you aware of the natural world. You feel wind on your face. And of course, interacting with the piece brings people together. So this is social sculpture as much as it is a beautiful work of art that casts this lovely kind of Islamic pattern of shadows on the wall behind it. Contemporary art engages all of our senses, connects people to each other, to themselves, to the world immediately around you, and like many of the works in the Cuban show, takes you far beyond.
This philosophy on contemporary art fits perfectly with the philosophy of 21C, where you experience art while part of your daily activities.
Contemporary art is about lived experience, and what better way to engage with it than by experience it directly as part of your daily activities.
The exhibit, Transporting Transformations, Cuba In and Out, will be up until February, and it's free and open to the public 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. After all, it is a hotel as well, so it's always open. Reporting from Bentonville for Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
This week in This American Life, a man is recruited by government intelligence. His job? To test the security of banks by trying to rob them. And his handler tells him,
do not stay in a bank for longer than 5 minutes. And if you get arrested, stay silent. We'll have you out within 24 hours.
So he gets arrested. And then he learns his handler doesn't actually work for the government. This week.
This American Life, Saturday morning at 6, Sunday mornings at 10 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
It is Thursday, October 3rd, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And a little more fine art.
Okay.
A string quartet named for an American Impressionist painter.
Oh, this is so exciting.
This is the Cassatt String Quartet.
Right.
An all-female group formed in 1985, and they will play a world premiere composition written by living composer Bruce Adolph.
If you listen to performance today, you hear him do the Piano Puzzler every week.
There you go. And it will be performed during a residency at the University of Central Arkansas today. Mm-hmm. And then the piece, which is titled Mary Cassatt, Scenes from Her Life, will be performed at 6:30 tomorrow at Crystal Bridges.
That's very exciting.
And he will be there.
Yes.
So very exciting. The quartet will also play Shostakovich's String Quartet No. 8 and Ravel's String Quartet. And cost for all of this is $10 if you're not a member.
That's crazy
Yeah. Expensive. Yeah. Crystalbridges.org. Make reservations.
Ah, thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor, Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Mental Health America in Northwest Arkansas and the National Alliance on Mental Illness will hold its 9th annual Candlelight Vigil to raise awareness of mental illness this Sunday from 6 to 7 p.m. in the chapel of the First United Methodist Church at 206 West Johnson Avenue in Springdale. This event is free and open to the public. More information is available by calling 521-1158.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Marble.
Okay, where's Marble?
All right, now I said Marble yesterday, and then Antoinette asked me where's Marble. And I had it on the entirely wrong side of Huntsville. I said it was between Fayetteville and Huntsville. It's not. And thank you, everyone who listened closely, and let me know. Because I have driven through Marble at least 2,000 times. Because it's on the way to where I grew up. So when I was in college, I would drive. Anyway, it's on 412. It's on the eastern side of Huntsville, not the western. So it is between Dry Fork and Huntsville. And I apologize for moving it several miles.
I've seen the sign. I've seen the Dry Fork sign.
And I there were some people who emailed me and said, you know what, next time you're in Marble, stop.
You should. And
so I'm going to. So I appreciate that. I apologize. Marble, again, is the town we're saluting today.
I bet there's some good stories in Marble.
I bet there are.
Yeah.
Okay. So Marble, Arkansas, on 412, the other side of Huntsville. I apologize. I'm going to Gridiron tonight. Tonight is kind of the dress rehearsal, but because of scheduling, it's a canned food drive. And so I'll be able to report tomorrow how the area journalists are poking fun at newsmakers.
I hope to go this evening as well.
Oh, good.
Antoinette Grajeda is in Gridiron.
As is Zeke Martin.
Right.
Who you hear on the air from time to time at KUAF. So, and it raises money for scholarships and Rogers Little Theater. It's a great event.
And then tomorrow evening, I'm going to the Theater Squared 4,000 Miles.
I think I'm going to go to that next week. So right. I'm anxious to hear what you think about it.
Okay.
Pulitzer Prize finalist play by Amy Herzog.
I'm excited to see it.
Very good. I can't wait to see it either.
All right. Well, you'll be back tomorrow.
With Antoinette with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large at noon.
And then you and I back together for Weekend.
Sunday morning.
Ozarks at Large.
Sunday morning at 9. That's right.
And I should say Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks for listening.